Years we've always had a shiur on Thanksgiving about Thanksgiving. And in the early years we talked about turkey, the halachic issues.
Here we go again.
Oh no, so we're not going to talk about turkey. Turkey we're not going to talk about, especially after I saw that video from the governor about turkey. I don't know which planet I was on when I saw that, but let's talk about. We talk about different.
I think we picked the bones clean on that issue.
Okay, so let's. I want to talk about. Review the history of Thanksgiving, and we'll talk about some of the issues and try to put it in some perspective. We'll see where this goes. First of all, let's review the history now. And we talk about the history of Thanksgiving. I want to talk about the history of Thanksgiving according to the interpretation of Rush Limbaugh, right? Rush Limbaugh. I don't know much about Rush Limbaugh. I used to listen to him years ago. I was available that time in the car sometimes. But if I'm not mistaken, there's only one thing he has been doing every single year for 31 years. Every year consistently. Almost word for word, and I listened to it last night again, and that is to review the history of Thanksgiving. He wrote a book, he wrote many books, and he first wrote it in just general terms, and he said himself that the most elaborate explanation and discussion of Thanksgiving is in his children's book. He wrote a bunch of books for children called Revere, something along those lines, Rush Revere series. And there he describes in very great detail exactly what happened in the year 1620. In the year 1620, the voyage of the Mayflower Compact, the governor and all the entire history. And he brings out incredible things. He has a lot of very powerful insight, and he is very disturbed that the story of Thanksgiving is taught in public schools and throughout the entire world, a fairy tale version of Thanksgiving, without really focusing on the core elements of what exactly happened in the year 1620, way before the establishment of America, and why it is a celebration, a very critical and elementary celebration in this country. So let's discuss some of the little details, and they're very relevant for us. Number one, in the year 1620, there was religious persecution throughout the entire world. And we'll get to that a little bit later. There was horrific religious persecution. And every country, they thought they knew, God spoke to them and told them what this world is all about. And they made sure that anyone that does not follow the rules of their religion, they would be tortured, executed, no tolerance whatsoever. There were a group of Quakers, okay? Like, you know, it's oatmeal Quaker? Like the brand Quakers, the Quaker brand. And these people were no tzaddikim. Let's not kid ourselves. They were fundamentalists. You would call them Christian fundamentalists. Is that a good term, Rabbi Michal? They're not exactly. They weren't Muslims, that's for sure.
Well, we don't like it when it's used on us, do we?
They were extremists. They really were quacks, from what I understand. Really, a bunch of real quacks, and they were expelled from England because they did not practice Christianity with the same rules as everyone else. And being that there was religious intolerance in England, they fled to Holland. And in Holland, they did not fare all that much better. And it came a point in time where they decided the only way they're going to be able to survive is to get out of this land. And being that Columbus discovered America in the year 1492, and now it's already 1620, it's been quite a long time since the discovery of the New World. There wasn't much going on in the New World, but a lot of Indians running around with feathers on their head. They decided, you know what, let's get out of this country and let's go somewhere else where they're not going to torture us and force us to, we'll have religious freedom. That's what they really wanted. And they they probably hired the same people who ran the Aguda convention to do a fundraising appeal for them, a fundraising event. You know, they probably went online, they had charity.com, a whole big fundraising event to raise money to get sponsors. Someone should sponsor their voyage to the new land, to the new world. Okay, there was like a real collection agency, like just like they do today. They raised a lot of money at sponsors, and they all got on this ship called the Mayflower. There were 40 of these people, 40 people in this chevra, in this chevra of the Quakers. Besides them, there were more people. There were a total of, I think, 102, is that correct? 102 people? There were a total of how many people?
But why do you call them Quakers? Aren't they Puritans?
I'm forgetting my history. Maybe you're right. They're Puritans. I think they're the same. Aren't they one and the same, the Quakers and the Puritans? I don't remember. You're right. I don't remember. We'll call them Puritans.
Quakers,
fine.
Are in Pennsylvania, not in Massachusetts.
Okay, whatever it is. I don't remember. So the Puritans. This group, 40 people, got on the ship together with another group of people. How many people were on the ship in total? I think 102. I think there were a total of 102 people on the ship. Those are the people who were just there for other reasons. They just wanted to get out of there. They wanted to go to the New World. They wanted to find for themselves a better life somewhere else. 102 people got on a ship that was sponsored by some very wealthy people in Holland and maybe in England, I don't know. And they got on the ship to cross the Atlantic, which was sakonis nefashos. To cross the Atlantic in those days, it was not like you go on an El Al plane and sit in business class. This is mamish bikuach nefesh to cross the Atlantic to come to America, to come to the new land, to come to the to this new land. And while they're on the ship, they have plenty of time to sit and do nothing when they're on the ship. It takes a very long time to travel in those times across the Atlantic. And when they were on the ship, they came up with an idea, which is basically what we would call communism. And they all got together and they decided, according to Rush Limbaugh, is that they wrote the Mayflower Compact? How do you pronounce it? Compact with a T at the end? The Mayflower Compact, which was a document where these 40 people committed themselves like with a shavua, that they are going to be part of a community, a joint community, which today we would call either a socialist community or communist community, where basically they will all work together on property that they would seize or they would purchase, whatever it would be, and everything that they earn will go to the tefusa sabayis, okay, the Hebrew term, which
kibbutz,
right? It'll go to the community, and every one of these 40 people will have their own share. I'll post for you the link. You can listen to Rush Limbaugh say it much better than I can ever do my whole life, how he explains the whole story. I just want to bring up certain points which are very relevant to what I want to discuss with you today. And they wrote up this document called the document called the Mayflower Compact, which they committed themselves to a community which, from our perspective today, we would call it a socialist society or a communist society, where no one owns anything. All of the income, all of the profits will be part of the tzibur, will belong to the tzibur, and each one will have an equal share in the profits. Kachava, they came to America, they came to the new land, it wasn't called America then, of course, 1620. They came to the new land, and somehow, I don't know all the details, they got a hold of some land, and they started to live, and there was a very, very harsh winter. They arrived, when did they arrive? I don't know, early November. They arrived in early November, it seems, and very, very soon set in a horrific winter. And half of them died. Half of them, from the 40 people, only 20 of them survived the winter. And the other 102 people, the other people that were on the ship together with them, also half of them died. I don't know what became of them, but half of the people did not survive the winter. It was a horrific experience. After this winter, somehow they got together at some point in time with the Indians, the natives of the land, and there was someone there, what was his name? There was one special person there. Remember his name? I forgot his name. There was one specific person that was extremely helpful. He's really the hero of Thanksgiving. I don't remember his name, but it's not relevant.
John Smith.
No, not John Smith. It was someone else.
Pocahontas.
Pocahontas.
Oh, no. She wasn't around then.
No, there was
you don't mean Lauren.
With an S. Something with an S. I forgot. You listen to Drush Limbaugh. I'll give you the link later. You listen to it. It's not important for us. The Indians are very...
I think it was Miles Standish.
No. Someone else. Whatever it is. There were a lot of people. A lot of different figures in this point. But whatever it was, there was a person. The Indians helped them. Indians taught them how to fish, how to find the beavers, how to grow potatoes. They taught them a lot of things. They taught them a lot of secrets.
Yeah. And was the name Massasoit?
No. Someone else. You listen to the video later on. Whatever it was, but the Indians were very kind. They were very kind. They saw that these people, they came from Holland, from England, whatever it was, and they didn't know the Aleph Beis, how to survive in this brutal desert wasteland. And they taught them some tricks. They taught them some tricks of survival. And because they taught them those tricks of survival, they were able to live. They survived. They were able to survive. And they, whoever survived, survived due to the assistance, the kindness of the natives, Native Americans, the Indians. So they did a very big, very great chesed. Those, if not for the Indians, even the 20 people would not have survived. It was bad enough that half of them died due to the freezing winter and starvation. The other 20 also would have starved to death. It's only because of the kindness of the Indians, which helped them, they were able to survive. And that kindness was not forgotten. That kindness was not lost upon these Puritans who arrived, who fled Holland because of religious persecution. Okay? They learned the tricks of the trade. They knew how to survive. And then came the next winter, the next season. And they continued to be committed to the Mayflower Compact, which means they continued to attempt to create a society where all of the earnings, the profits, the revenue that would come in from them working the land would go to the community, their miniature macroscopic community, and each one would have a share in the profits, and they would share together. And then they discovered, okay, the governor, I don't remember all the names of the people, all the famous people, the person that was in charge, person that was the person that was in charge of these 20 people.
It was William Bradford.
William Bradford, correct. William Bradford.
Documentary.
William Bradford. He was the governor, and of these 20 people, I guess by now maybe some of them, I don't know, they had children, they buried Indians, and it's not so clear exactly how they populated. Maybe new people came in the meantime. New people from the New World came. It's not so clear, but they began to increase in number. People joined them. People that were there from there before. They joined the community and they agreed to the rules of the community, and it was very tough. You don't come and join the community unless you follow the rules. This was not a hefkeres. This was a very, very strong, powerful, committed group of people. They were very religious, extremely religious, extremely disciplined. We can't even begin to imagine the type of commitment they had to their religion and to each other and to what they were trying, the community they were trying to create. And people joined them and they got a little bit bigger and they continued to proceed with the plan, with the goal of fulfilling what it's the agreement that it said in the Mayflower Compact. William Bradford discovered that the people were getting very lazy. They decided, why should I work so hard? If I work hard, my neighbor, he's not working so hard. I should go break my back and sweat it out, risk my life to plant, to plow, so my friend over here should reap all the profits. We're going to share everything together. I'm going to work doubly as hard, and what I work for, my neighbor, he's going to get the same share. So William Bradford saw that this system was not working. And at this time in world history, socialism, what we call today, so I don't know what they called it then, but what we called socialism or communism, I don't even know what the difference between the two are, but they're very similar. That's the way the world worked. That's the way the world worked. That was popular. It was a takeoff of the feudal system. to a certain degree. And he saw that this system is garbage. It doesn't work. So he decided, together with them, we're going to abolish, we're going to destroy the Mayflower Compact, and we're going to start a capitalist system. It's an incredible chiddush, incredible thing that happened. It's all Rush Limbaugh. We're going to start a capitalist system where we're going to take this kibbutz that we own together, and we're going to divide it among all of us. And everyone has their own private chelek, their own private portion. And whatever you earn, you keep. V'zehu. You don't have to share it with anyone. Everyone gets to earn the fruits of their own labor. If you work hard, you will have more for yourself. If you don't want to do anything, then you'll have nothing. You'll starve to death. He abolished the Mayflower Compact, which in essence was a socialist document, a doctrine, a theology of socialism, and he replaced it with capitalism, a capitalist approach to economics, to creating a society. And in a very short time, these people thrived. There was competition. Everyone enjoyed
Yigias Kapayim.
They enjoyed the fruits of their own efforts. They thrived. And people took note. And more people wanted to join the society. And more people did. And it became a society, probably one of the first societies of capitalism in the modern world. Were there other examples of capitalism in the world? I don't know. I don't know history. I don't know. It doesn't seem that it was too popular because of wicked people, always ganavim, they're always tyrants, which always destroyed capitalist system from its incipient stage.
Was capitalism in England then?
No, there was not. It was a feudal system. England was always a feudal system. I believe not. I don't know for sure. I believe England was always
Rabbi,
a feudal system.
Rabbi Imani, is this what they're calling the socialists today? Are calling the 1609, the 1619 project?
Whatever. No.
I don't know what that is.
No.
That's a lie. That's a crazy slavery thing. That's a mishigas. That's a total lie.
The 1620 project is about.
That's a total lie. That's a total lie. That whole thing over there. That they came to America to, you know, there's a whole, they could just have slaves. That's a terrible thing. Let's go further. That's a terrible thing. But this is Rush Limbaugh. This is his research. This is something he's been saying for 31 years. And has attracted the attention of many, many people understanding what happened in the Thanksgiving. They scrapped the Mayflower Compact of socialism, and they created a capitalist society. It was the first capitalist society of the modern world. There was no interference, there were no tyrants, there were no Democrats to go and destroy it. And they thrived. They thrived like never before. And people took note and they joined and they got even greater, and just it took off like crazy. They had enormous prosperity. And then they decided to make a party, a Thanksgiving party. And who did they invite to the party? The Indians. The Indians, the people that did with them chesed, kindness, to help them, teach them some tricks of the trade in order to survive the harsh winter, who taught them how to fish, to find the beavers, how to skin the beavers, have nice leather coats.
And that's where they made their money on the beavers and exporting the
and they thanked them. Points. Now here,
even though there were no Hasidim to buy them at the time.
There were no Strimluch yet. So here is the point that Rush Limbaugh makes. It's very, very, very important for us in our Hashkafa. Rush Limbaugh says, there never would have been a Thanksgiving party if not for the prosperity of this new community of capitalists. If they would have continued their communist society, they would barely have what to eat. And they would not be in a frame of mind of generosity to sit down with someone at a table, let's have a suda, a meal, and let's be chaverim, and let's be makir toy, they make like a yeshiva dinner. They made a yeshiva dinner. And they called up, remember they dug up from the archives This guy, who when we started the yeshiva, he helped us, like they do today. Today they make a yeshiva dinner, they got to go find the carbon to be a guest of honor. So, oh, remember 50 years ago, there was a guy, he got us a permit from the government to build the yeshiva. Oh, let's go honor him. They were in a state of prosperity, which changed their outlook on life. It gave them the ability to be generous. And when they felt generous, it overflowed with a will to reciprocate to the people that helped them survive when they came and they had nothing. Now, therefore, Thanksgiving has two parts to it, two critical elements. American history, and we need this for us again. Number one, if not for the Indians, they would have been dead. They would have died. If not for these people who have helped them when they came to America, they would have starved to death. Half of them did starve to death. But if not for the Indians, they would have starved to death. But there never would have been the Thanksgiving dinner. There was something much, much more important that happened. Much more important is that William Bradford came to the realization that socialism and communism is a failure. And the only reason why it survived in the world for so many generations is because people were prisoners to leaders who are tyrants and kept them in check to steal from them all of their money. But here you're dealing with a small society. No one's bothering us. We're in a new world. They were able to create a pure system of capitalism where each person can earn what he works for. And you can have the satisfaction, you can have the drive, the motivation to earn. And that created a system of economics which was incredibly successful, brought them enormous blessing. And now, because they have all of this incredible baracha, they were now in a frame of mind to give tzedakah, to do chesed, and to go back and thank the Indians for what they've given them. That's the story of Thanksgiving. In public school, they don't teach you the second part of the story. They only teach you about the Indians. They don't talk about communism and capitalism. They don't talk that 90% of Thanksgiving is all about the creation of a capitalist economy, which is the
bedrock. They just teach that these settlers were mean to the Indians.
This is the bedrock of the United States of America. If you want to define what is the difference between the United States of America and the rest of the world, okay, there are really two things I want to touch upon. Number one, capitalism. This is the first and most important difference between the rest of, even though you'll tell me capitalism today has spread, it's true. There's a lot of jealousy of the success of the United States in the last 200 years. And many countries decide, you know what, maybe it's a good idea. Maybe capitalism is a good idea, and they've tried to imitate, but not totally. I don't think there's any country in the world that imitated capitalism to the degree of the United States. Israel is not a capitalist society, no way. No way. It's a socialist society, Israel, 100%. It's not capitalism there, Israel. Far from it.
Or at least less than it used to be.
Yeah, now it's a little bit better, but years...
The startup nation has negated some of that socialism.
Socialism...
How about Canada? Canada's the nut copy?
Canada has a mix of socialism. A place like Singapore, for example, that's a totally capitalist.
But they came much later on. They followed the model of the United States. The United States of America, if you want to compare the United States to all the other countries of the world, it's the first thing is capitalism. It's a country that is built on the foundation of capitalism. The world never knew this. The world in the world stage, there's no such thing. A feudal system, there are lords, there are slaves, avadim, masters and slaves. And then later in the world, there was socialism. There were a few experiments here and there throughout world history of capitalism, which failed miserably because of corruption. But the United States established a healthy, robust nation built upon the principles of capitalism. That's really what Thanksgiving is about. William Bradford is the inventor of the economy of America today, beyond a shadow of a doubt. And the reason why they were able to have this Seudas Hoidah, with turkey and cranberry sauce and apple pie is only because of capitalism. And when you're in a good mood, like Esav said to Yaakov, Achi, yesh li rav, I have plenty. Yihi loch asher loch, vayishokehu. Esav kissed Yaakov. The Choliba Rashi says. Why? Because Ach yesh li rav. When you're blessed and you have an abundance, then you can be in a frame of mind to be generous, to give, to look back, to do chesed, to look for good things. The world was starving because it was a selfish world of ganovim, reitzchim, bandits. And here, an amazing thing happened in this new world. One person, William Bradford, he abolished, he ripped up the Mayflower Compact, created capitalism. They were successful. They were in a gracious frame of mind. And they gave back to the Indians. That's Thanksgiving. Okay, now, why am I telling you all of this? First, there are a lot of things I want to discuss about this. That's one. First thing, by the way, these people, they were also... My father, Zichron Levracha, he was an economist. And one of his favorites, he was also a rabbi. And he loved to talk about analyzing the Torah's economic system. The economic system for Torah Jews. What is it? Define it. Is the Torah promote capitalism? Or does the Torah promote socialism? It's extremely, extremely difficult to define. Mitzad Echad, the Torah appears very much to take on the approach of capitalism. Because in capitalism, an individual owns things. You own property. You own animals. You own slaves. You own land. And the Torah talks about stealing. Don't take away from him. If you steal, there are penalties. The Torah appears to primarily focus from, we're Americans, when we read the Torah, yeah, of course, don't steal. Private ownership, don't steal, don't take away. Land, it's his property. The whole Masechta, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, fits like a glove into the principles of capitalism. And indeed, that's what it really appears to be. But it's much more complex, because you have to understand there's also something called Shemitah, where all loans are canceled. How does that fit into the picture? There's something called Yovel, where land returns back to its original owner. How does that fit into the picture? How do you understand the tax system of the Torah, of Trumois, Maisrois, Bikurim? There are 24 gifts you have to give to the Kohanim. How do you understand that? How do you understand the laws of Yerusha? There are a lot of things in Torah law which don't necessarily fit into capitalism. That's not the model. And as America has evolved, it's much more complex. Corporations. What is a corporation? It's a joke. What is a corporation? A corporation basically means I'm not liable. Don't blame me. It's a crazy invention of man, a corporation. It's absurd. It's an absurd invention of man. We have corporations, which basically means my company can go kill people, can do whatever they want. I'm not responsible. I take all the money, I get all the profits, but I have no liability. Does that make any sense to you? There's no such thing like that in the Torah.
So he's saying, from what I read of your father, he's saying capitalism, yes, but with some regulations in order for the benefit of society as a whole.
It's much more complicated than that. It's extremely complicated. It's a very complicated world. It's a very complicated, but it is something which every, since the beginning of history, in order to understand to achieve success, you need an economic system. And every country in the world from day one struggles every single day to create a society that is successful, prosperity. And no one has it easy. Capitalism doesn't work for everyone. It doesn't work for everyone. And there are major issues, major problems. And that's why countries have rejected.
Rabbi,
yes.
Rabbi, why can't we say, if you want to boil it down a little differently, that the only ism that the Yidden believe in, is not capitalism, not socialism, Judaism. That's it, Judaism.
But the problem is, of course, but in order for Judaism to work,
you follow the Torah. That's it. Forget about all the other isms.
You have to know what the principles are that apply to this. You haven't. It isn't Hefker.
Judaism demands Shemitah.
The Torah says something else completely. It's not yours. It's Hashem. Hashem gave it to you, and it may be temporary. Maybe the next day he's going to.
But the Torah gives it to you. The Torah gives you only it. The Torah.
Share it with your brother. It's Hashem's property.
Not totally. The Torah gives you something. Okay, this is the big thing. Now, why am I telling you all this? This week's Parsha is really the story of the Mayflower. What happens in this week's Parsha? I'm throwing out ideas. Nothing I'm telling, of course, makes any sense, but something to think about. Lavan comes to Yaakov Avinu. Lavan comes a pauper. He doesn't have a penny to his name. Eliphaz cleaned him out. He comes to Lavan, and Lavan is sitting there for a few days. And what happens? Vayomer Lavan liYaakov, he says to him, "Nu." First he comes and he says, "You'll be my guest." Vayomer Lavan, "Ach atzmi uvesori at oto vayeshev imo chodesh yamim." What was he? He was a guest. He was a pauper, an ani, in the street. He took free gifts, charity. What happens the next day after 30 days? After giving Yaakov charity for 30 days, Lavan says to Yaakov, "You know what? Vayomer Lavan liYaakov, achi ata, vavadetani chinam. You're going to work for me for free? What does that mean also? What does that mean? Hagidli ma maskurtech. Nu, tell me your wages." And they strike up a business arrangement. Ulavan shtei bonois goes on. Basically, what I'm trying to show over here is that Lavan and Yaakov created a socialist society or a feudal society where Yaakov doesn't own anything. Yaakov is just a slave, or Yaakov has a share. He gives him all the animals and he works. But Yaakov Avinu is not for 14 years a capitalist. Yaakov Avinu is working. Vayavoid, look what the pasuk says. Vayavoid Yaakov Berachel Sheva Shanim. Communism. You work for the mother country, Mother Russia. Mother Russia owns everything. Mother Russia owns your shoes. Everything goes to Mother Russia. You work for Mother Russia. You're a patriot. You're loyal. And Mother Russia, when she wants, will give you a piece of stale bread. Everything goes to Mother Russia. This goes on for 14 years. What happens at the end of 14 years? Yaakov Avinu becomes, lahavdil elef alfei havdalos, multiplied a billion times over, William Bradford. And what does he say to Lavan? He says to Lavan, "Enough of this crazy, crazy arrangement. Let me read you the pasuk." Pasuk says, "Let me find the pasuk." Wait 1 second. Here it is. Chamishi, vayomer Lavan, you work for Mother Russia very well. You have to go through all the nuance, but there's a pasuk over here which says something very powerful. And Yaakov says, "Vayomer Moed etilach, vayomer Yaakov, loy titen li meuma, im tas le'adav azeh ashuv ve'eret etzelch eshmar." Okay, let me go further. The answer be to this pasuk to me stands out. There are a lot of questions in all the psukim to analyze the entire relationship, the financial relationship between Lavan and Yaakov. But this pasuk, I believe, is a very important pasuk that I'm about to read to you. It's one of many psukim which doesn't necessarily fit. I'm trying to bring out with all the other psukim, but it does speak volumes. The answer be tzidkasi b'yoy mochar. My righteousness will speak for me in the future. Ki savoy al sichari lefanecha. My reward will come before you. This pasuk to me is basically saying is, I want out of communism. I want to start a capitalist society. I want you to invest. You give me the capital. Provide me with capital, with animals. And I will invest. And you will get yours. You'll get yours. But whatever I earn is mine. I'm not working for you anymore. There's a major shift in the financial relationship between Lavan and Yaakov at this point in time. He slaved away for him for 14 years, as the pasuk calls him an evet, over and over. I'm a slave. In a communist society, every member of society is a slave. You own nothing. Mashekone evet, kone rabbi. Whatever a member of a communist society earns goes to Mother Russia. It goes to the state. And then the state, throw you a bone. I have an incentive to go make Mother Russia rich. I couldn't care less. I only get a bone anyway. So why should I work hard? He says now, I want to make a life for myself. I want my own assets. I want to be a capitalist. I need an investment. I need a sponsor. Lavan, give me a loan. Give me animals. Give me animals. Let those animals be mine, and everything else I'll pay back will be yours. The roots of capitalism are happening right here when Yaakov wants out of this feudal system. The answer be, he says over here, he says, Ever b'chol tzan chayoyim, hoser misham, kol se no koid vitolu, v'chol se. It's mine. These animals that are not speckled, they are speckled and spotted, are mine. And the other animals are yours. You're going to invest in me. You're going to give me capital. And I can do with that capital whatever I want. I can prosper. And in reward for you investing in me, I'll work for you. I'll take care of your animals. Your animals will also go. That will be how I will pay back the investment that you've made in me. And Yaakov was phenomenally successful. Ad kedei kach, that all of Lavan's other children were jealous like crazy. This is world history. Lavan is the communist. And Yaakov is the capitalist. And Yaakov is extremely successful. And after doing this for a couple of years, after 6 years, Lavan can even look at Yaakov. All the other countries of the world, they look at America with such jealousy. Where did this prosperity come from? Where did it come from? You know where it came from? Capitalism. Not from tyrants who steal everything and make you into slaves and smile at you and say, we're so good to you, look how kind we are to you. Lavan was a socialist. Yaakov was a slave to socialism for 14 years. He then said, give me something private ownership. The hoyo sichori. The onsa bi sichori biyoy mochar. I'll work for myself. It will prosper. Ki savoy sechari lefanecha. It will be mine. You'll see it's mine. Nothing, and I'll pay you back for your kind investment of giving me a loan. I will work for you. Isn't that what happened? And you know what happened at the end? Then he got so jealous, Lavan, he ran away. Yaakov ran away with his wives. And he kept on telling, when it's interesting, when he runs away, what is he telling his wife? Tell Lavan, he's a ganav. Your father's a ganav. What do you mean he's a ganav? Where do we ever find Lavan, a ganav? He stole something? The economic system of communism and socialism is the ultimate Geneva. This is Geneva. You own nothing. Owning nothing is Geneva on steroids. Everything that you do belongs to someone else. This is the ultimate Geneva. Yaakov, im ikesh titapel, with a person who's cunning, you play the game. Vayignav, the word Geneva and Gezel appear in this parasha over and over again. Vayignav Yaakov, he stole a slave, Lavan Harami. Al Bali Higiloki Varechu. You want to be a guy? You were a Yaakov when he became so successful. It's amazing. When he became a capitalist, he looked back 14 years before and he says, I was a fool. For 14 years, I was part of that crazy country, socialism, communism. He now realized what a ganav Lavan is. In Ikeshti Tapel, Vayignav Lavan a slave. Lavan Haram, he ran away, gave him a taste of his own medicine. And then later on, it comes on, he says to him, what did you do this to me for? So you know what he says to him? He says to him, I was afraid. You know why I ran away? Ki oresi, ki amarti, pentigzol, espinosecha mi'imi. I had to run away because you're a ganav. A ganav steals secretly. A gazlan steals publicly. When you're a ganav, you know what happens when you're a ganav? It leads to becoming a gazlan, to commit atrocities. The Russia, communism, the rishis, where does the wickedness of the Russians, what they've done to the world, one to Jews, the torture, how many people, Stalin, how many people he killed, he murdered, wars, where does that come from? It comes from the economy. When the whole economy is built on Geneva, Geneva's secret theft.
Also, it comes from their so-called constitution, which promises the workers paradise.
Right, so it makes believe. That's Geneva. You make believe.
And everything else, and equality, and it's all fraud.
You live in a world of make believe, and you present, you package it in this beautiful packaging. That's Geneva. On the outside, it looks very nice, but on the inside, the goal is to steal from everyone. You know where that leads to? When you're a ganav, it takes you down a path to become a gazlan, to commit crimes publicly, to commit atrocities, to commit genocide. I know what you're all about, Lavan. I worked for you for 14 years. You're a ganav. And you know where that ganav is going to lead? You'll murder your own daughters. You'll assassinate your own daughters. Look what Saddam Hussein, he killed his own family. Meshugayim. Why? The ultimate communism, what he had going there for himself. Geneva, which is private theft, leads to Gezela, public theft, which basically means there's nothing that's going to, you'll do to commit the worst crimes possible. When there are private crimes, there are public. The whole essence of the socialist approach to the economy is pure Geneva.
Well, that's the thought process of Ben Soromora. He steals from his parents. He's going to be eventually.
He's going to lead. It takes you even further.
Publicly.
And then what at the end is, I find this to be very, very funny now, this last part. The Thanksgiving dinner of Parashas Vayetze. So Lavan comes. Hashem says to Lavan, don't you dare talk to him. Stay away. And you know what the end is? The end of the whole story is they make peace between each other after they make a Yagas Hadusa. The Atlantic Ocean will separate communism from capitalism. The Galeid, and they make a party. Vayizbach Yaakov Zevach Bahar, Vayikro Le'echov, Yaakov, with all his prosperity, he calls all of his brothers, Le'echo Lechem, the Thanksgiving Suda. After Yaakov Avinu is successful and is prosperous and parts and says to Lavan, get lost, you're a fraud. Yaakov Avinu, he celebrates his success. He makes a party and he invites all of the Indians. Vayikra Yaakov Le'echov Le'echol Lechem, Vayoichlu Lechem, Vayolinu Bahar. And then Yaakov goes on to serve Hashem. So I really believe that the roots of the difference between socialism and capitalism are rooted right here in Parshas Vayetze. When you study the work arrangement between Lavan and Yaakov for 14 years, where the Torah calls them an Eved, and when Yaakov breaks with him and says, give me some of my own assets. V'hoya sichori, v'hoya sichori, let it be my own, not you, me. And my, the onsa beat tzidkasi liyoymacha. What does that mean, tzidkasi? My success. Let me work for myself and be a successful person, liyoymacha, to have a future for myself. This is capitalism. Mamish. This is the break. This is the separation. It's exactly what happened with the people, the Puritans, who went on that ship. They started out in a mindset of communism. They realized the whole thing is a fraud. And Bradford abolished it, created a capitalist society which thrived. And they said to the world, go get lost. You're a bunch of mishagoyim. You're a bunch of ganovim. Now that we're finally free from your shackles of slavery and intimidation and corruption, and we have private ownership, not only can we be successful, we can be generous. I don't know all the details, but I don't believe there's a country in the world that is as generous as the United States of America. The amount of foreign aid, the amount of promotion of human rights, rights for women, across the entire board. What they've done for the country, okay, everyone knows we live in America on Mifsim. Mem is Medicare /
Medicaid.
Both. Why both? Both.
No. It's government Medicare money. Is a different.
I know what they are.
You're talking to everybody here who gets Medicare.
Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare / Medicaid. Vav is WIC, right? Vav is WIC. Pay is food stamps. And Samach is Social Security. V'yeshoimrim, Section 8. And as long...
Yes, and the Vav for welfare.
Welfare, okay. Vav for welfare. V'yeshoimrim, welfare. And as long as there's no Magefa, we're good. What's the Magefa? The Mem is the mayor. The Gimel is the governor. The Pay is Fauci. And the Hay is the health department.
Yeah, I used that last week.
So as long as we're still living on Mivsim, we're okay. It's an incredible thing. It's chesed. Where does this chesed come from? It comes from success. Where does the success come from? V'onsa bi tzidkasi b'yoy machar. If you want to make a drasha, you can say, what is the tzidkasi? Apostle tzidkasi means my success. But it also means tzedakah. When you let a person be a capitalist and you let him work for himself and succeed, have motives to make his own money be successful, he earns a lot of money. And you know what he does with all the money? He gives tzedakah. He creates a program called Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, Social Security, to help the people that Rachmana Litzlan can't help themselves. That's the result. The result is that when you're a capitalist, it's not for everyone. Unfortunately, there are people that are just not capable of working. Unfortunately, Rachmana Litzlan, for all different crazy reasons, whatever it is, Rachmana Litzlan. But the people that are generous, who are the capitalists, at least they'll have the resources to give tzedakah. If you live in Russia, you have nothing, and you have nothing to give. There's no, everyone's a poor person. Everyone is poor. Because there's nothing, you don't have any sechari, you have no sechari, so there's nothing to save. There's no tzedakah either. It's garnished. That's been proven. Everyone in a communist society is poor.
You recall Margaret Thatcher's famous
about
socialism in Britain, that socialism is fine until you run out of other people's money.
Very good. So this is a very, very fascinating study of the story of Thanksgiving. This is one of his big legacies, Rush Limbaugh. Okay, Yishev Refuah Shleima. I don't have any no problem with him. Okay, he's done quite a bit. He's not necessarily a tzaddikal, Hamevin Yavin. Okay, Hamevin Yavin, but he is quite a powerful person who has shaken up America in an amazing way. And I believe the only thing that he does every single year exactly the same, he set himself for 31 years, is his yisoid, his chidushim on Thanksgiving, to appreciate what Thanksgiving really is. And, chochma ba'amim tamin, and you look at what he says, it's very powerful, and you look in the Torah, and you look in Parash Vayetze, and this week's parasha, and you look at Lavan and Yaakov, and you analyze what's going on. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of parallels. There's a lot to learn and to discover and to analyze, to appreciate, and to question. What exactly does the Torah promote? What kind of society does the Torah promote? It's very complicated. It's extremely complicated. What is a Torah Jew's economic system in society? How exactly does that work? A lot has been said about this. A lot has been studied about this. And no one really is able to come away with clarity to perfectly understand how all of this works to make everyone successful. But there's a lot going on over here. I really believe over here, this is the roots of capitalism in the words of Yaakov Avinu in this pasuk, the hoya sichari. That is the roots of capitalism in Klal Yisrael. Yaakov was way before Bradford. Light years before Bradford, he saw it all. He saw it all. Okay, now there's another point I want to make, and that is another major difference between America and all the other nations of the world. And that is what we call freedom of religion. Freedom of religion is a major, major topic. If you go to Wikipedia, they have a massive entry on the words freedom of religion. It's fascinating to read what it says there. It's fascinating. And there's something called freedom of belief. And there's something called freedom of worship. And then what we call in America freedom of religion. And there is the study of world history of all these different terms. Freedom of belief means if you believe in another religion, if you're living in a country, let's say that's a fundamentalist Islam, and there's no tolerance, maybe the most you can get from them is what's called freedom of belief. We'll let you read books about other ideologies, but if you practice, if you do a mitzvah, you do a worship, an act of worship, will torture you. And in some countries, we don't even allow freedom of belief. Other countries, you may have something we'll call freedom of worship, but not of belief, which means you can practice, but no books. Don't influence people. No books, no study. Just die out. It's very, very complicated. America is a modern country where the law protects you. It's the Constitution. It's the First Amendment. The First Amendment of the Constitution protects a citizen's right to freedom of religion, which means you can study your religion, you can practice your religion, you can worship, you can do whatever you want. And the law, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights protects citizens, as long, of course, you don't harm anyone else. Okay, that's what it says, as long as you don't go kill anyone else. That's incredible. This is unprecedented, not totally. If you read the Wikipedia entry, the first one they have on record of instituting something that resembles freedom of religion in law is Koresh. Would you believe that? Koresh. The same person that told the Jewish people, go home. Go home. Build your temple. Who's stopping you? Go home. Build your temple. They go together. This is very important. It's not just, oh, Stam, we look at Koresh as, oh, he was a tzaddik. He told Klal Yisrael, go build your temple. No. There's something more to it. Koresh believed in freedom of religion for his own society. He enacted in law, in Persia. We have here, I don't know what they had. They maybe they were pagans, I don't know. Maybe they were, whatever they were. They believed in gods, whatever. But if there's a citizen here in this society that has a different belief, a different religion, you're accepted. You can stay here in the country. You can worship your God. You can do what you want. You can study your religion. When you have a society, here's the point I want to make. If you have a society that believes in freedom of religion, you know what the outgrowth of that is? Jews, go home, build your temple. Nothing is stopped. No one's going to stop you. The only reason why I'm saying I want to be mechadesh, the only reason why Koresh came to that statement, go home, I'll give a donation, I'll help you get back your kalim, is because he created for himself in his own country tolerance, freedom of religion. Now, after Koresh, governments that tolerated freedom of religion are few and far in between. Read up on it. Yeah.
You see in the Megillah at Ahasuerus's party, everyone is allowed to follow his own customs, his own practices.
At Chatzia Malchus. But not the Binyan Beis that he wasn't. It's not the same. At Chatzia Malchus. See, that's the thing. That's the
No. But I'm talking about the party itself.
Right.
Everyone
Kados. Ein Oines.
Their own cultures. That was all tolerated.
The Hashisio Kados. Very good. You're saying very good. So you have to understand Ahasuerus was a Parsi. He was just like his Koresh, but not like Koresh. You see, Koresh Institute, you're saying very good. V'ha-shesio chados. Chados means the law, the religion. Ein oines. Koresh went further. It was by him freedom of religion, and from that went forth, build the Beis HaMikdash. Ahasuerus was a shakron. He was a fraud.
Okay, but because, you see the
right. You see the concept, right?
Of
you
that
see.
Idea.
America is basically a replica of Koresh, not because they've yet said go build your Beis HaMikdash. The uniqueness about America is that in the Constitution it says there is freedom of religion. The law, it protects your right to practice your religion, to worship. Dvarim nefloim. There is no country in the world. They all make belief. They make belief to a degree, but total freedom of religion to the degree that it's the First Amendment, and it's amazing how last night, Chatzos on Thanksgiving itself, this came into practice. There was a Agudas Yisrael of America joined with the Archdiocese, the Church, to petition to bring a lawsuit. It went to the Supreme Court. You ever heard about this? What happened last night at 12 o'clock at night? This is going on already for a long time already, that the government has no right to shut down shuls. There is something called freedom of religion. The law protects the right to practice religion. You have no right to shut down. What about health issues? We leave the health issues to us. Leave it to us. We don't want to die. We know what it means to die. You know how many people die, how people suffer, how many people are sick? We know what it means to die and to get sick. We suffer plenty. We suffer even more than you. So we'll decide amongst ourselves what precautions we need and when we need them and how to do it. Because it doesn't seem that you, the CDC, know what you're doing anyway. It seems as though there's an enormous amount of fraud and all of your science has been proven to be baloney. So we don't want to die. We don't want to suffer. And we will decide how to deal with the sakana on our terms. But this approach of telling us to shut down our shuls is against the Constitution, freedom of religion. And you know who won the court case last night? Only because of the new justice that Trump put into place? Agudas Yisrael won their case. The Supreme Court of the United States of America.
Big disappointment on Roberts, Justice Roberts.
Yeah, he's terrible. No, yeah, he goes to show, right? It goes to show.
No surprises there.
It's not the first time.
Reversed a previous decision.
Pile Ployim.
The RBG had voted against.
And only because of this new woman he put into place. What's her name? Amy, what's her last name? She was the deciding vote.
Barrett.
Unbelievable. Pile Ployim, Mamish on Thanksgiving. Yeah. And we have to understand, what was Thanksgiving? Like, this is where it gets a little touchy. Because Thanksgiving with the Puritans. Why did the Puritans flee Holland? Religious persecution. Now, that's not a good answer. You know why? Because they were just as bad as the people who persecuted them. The same way they were the victims when they came to America, the Puritans, and they started their own community, they were not very tolerant of other religions. Okay, so they're no tzaddikim either. Okay, they ran to this country because of religious persecution and they became the aggressors. They became the same Balei Avera as what the people did to them. It took generations until George Washington, v'chulu, and the whole Constitution, where it became part of the Constitution, where this is a country built on the principles of freedom of religion, which in truth was why they fled. It's a little bit touchy to go that avenue, like I told you, because they were not tzaddikim.
They had to kill the witches of Salem first.
Okay,
I'm sure this will be a major theme as the Aguda Convention begins tonight about the...
Toot their own horn.
Something to give thanks for.
Give thanks to themselves. They were the ones that took the lead in this. Okay, but I want to tell you my Chazal, which is very relevant. Every day, Rabbi Yisai, we say Moedim. Three times a day. We say Moedim Shemona Esrei. Unbelievable. We give Chodah. Thanksgiving for Klal Yisrael is not one day a year. It's every single day, three times a day. And if you wash, you eat bread, even Mizonos, what do you say? You say the Brach of Noida Lecha, Hashem Elokeinu. So multiple times a day. A person's supposed to have two meals a day. He's supposed to wash. It's five times a day. Five times a day. Then you say Moedim D'Rabbanan two times a day. Seven times. Sheva Bayoim Hilalucha. Pasuk in Tehillim. Seven times a day do you praise Hashem. You daven Shemona Esrei three times a day, which means you say Moedim three times. Technically, you're supposed to eat a meal twice a day where you bench and you say Noida Lucha. That's already five. And Moedim D'Rabbanan Chazor Sashatz. Seven times a day do you say to Hashem.
We also have something called a Korban Todah.
Okay, but that's only occasionally. That's
true, but that's the concept.
That's a Korban. That's once in a while.
Thanksgiving offering.
Okay, I think something like a bracha. I'm talking about mamash a bracha. Bracha b'sheimu malchus. Okay, bracha b'sheimu malchus. That's with the word noidilcha. Moedim, noidilcha. Five times, and then when the Shliach Tzibur is saying the bracha, we respond with Moedim D'Rabbanan. Now here's the question. It's important. One of the very important point. Where do you say Moedim? Moedim is recited immediately after the bracha of Ritzeh. What is the bracha of Ritzeh? It's called Avoda. In Artskol Siddur, they have titles before every single bracha. Avoda. When do we Ritzeh Hashem Elohim bi'amcha Yisrael levis vilos of Yoshev v'hoshev Return the service to your holy sanctuary. The Ishe Yisrael, and the fire offerings of Klal Yisrael usafila summon their prayers ba'ahava sekabel baratzen. This is the bracha called avoda, worship, worship. You know, I mentioned before, throughout history there were different levels of freedom when it came to religion. The most you would get in a country would be what would be called freedom of belief. We're not gonna kill you just because you believe in a different religion than us. We really should kill you, but we need your money. You're a good plumber. You're a good computer programmer. You know how to do things that not everyone can do. So, you know, we'll tolerate you only ad kedei kach, freedom of belief. Freedom of worship? Ooh, this is not so pashut. This was few and far in between. Most countries didn't even allow freedom of belief. The Crusades, if you're a secret Jew, even believe. What is the guy doing already in his basement? Even believe in God? Ooh, you're finished. Okay? There were few and far in between countries, societies that allowed, went so far to allow freedom of worship. Ad kedei kach, to write it as the first amendment of the Constitution? Are you kidding? It's a joke. Who would believe such a thing? That's what America is. The law guarantees the right to worship, to do avoda, to do avoda. What happens after you have avoda? What's the next bracha? Hoida. When you're given the freedom of avoda, it demands upon a person to say modim. The reason why we say modim is not because, oh, we have to say modim every, oh, I have to say modim. No. If you said the bracha ritzei, and you come to a point where you have avoda, avoda demands hoida. It's a chazal. This is a maimah chazal. It's a pasuk. Let me quote you the pasuk. I wrote down the pasuk. The pasuk says, the drasha in chazal, kevon shebosa, shebos, kevon shebos, avoida, bosa toida, shenemar, zevach toida, yichab denani. The sacrifice of thanksgiving will give me honor. The juxtaposition of the word zevach, sacrifice, offer sacrifices, which is worship, the ability to actually worship your God. The next word, toda, to drasha. The pasuk simply means a sacrifice of thanksgiving is what gives Hashem honor. When you want to give Hashem honor, you offer him a karbon toida. Your Michal said, if you want to give honor to Hashem, you offer a karbon toida. But Chazal took this pasuk and they made a drasha. They analyzed two words. It says the word zevach, and then it says the word toida. Zevach is a concept, the concept of worship. The next word is toda, thanksgiving. Turkey, thanksgiving, toida. When you merit the opportunity to worship, it demands you give Hashem thanksgiving. Listen, there's a lot of controversy. We discussed this years ago. There's an old topic. You probably know this stuff in your sleep already. Should you celebrate Thanksgiving? Should you not celebrate Thanksgiving? Rav Moshe Feinstein, he has different teshuvas. One teshuva says yes, one says not. Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik embraced it. It was Adarabba. It's one of the chagim. No, after Yom Kippur, after Sukkot. What's the next chag? The next chag is Thanksgiving. It's one of the chagim. Rav Yoshe Ber embraced it. Rav Yitzhak Chutner held that it's osur. Rav Avigdor Miller, he held it's mamish avodah zarah. I'm not going there. This is none of my business. This is to each his own. To each his own. Everyone likes their turkey a certain way with a certain type of cranberry sauce. Everyone has a different apple pie. None of my business. That's not our topic. Topic is, if in the Welt today it's Thanksgiving, in the Welt, the ganze whole America, 330 million Americans are celebrating Thanksgiving. And here we are, we're in Golos. The Yidlach, we're in Golos. we should take note that Hashem has given us a gift in the last years of our galus to be in a makom where the laws of the country permit us to worship, permit us zevach. Ritzei Hashem Elokeinu bi'amcha Yisrael v'svilasam v'yosheves v'avod l'dvir be'secha. The Eibush has given us the opportunity of worship. There's never been such freedom of religion for Jews and Galus in history. Not even during the time of the Bayesheni. Could you imagine when there was a Beis HaMikdash? The Persians were breathing down our throats. The Romans were breathing down our throats. The Chashmonaim were breathing, the Yavanim were breathing down our throats. Even when there's a Beis HaMikdash, they're telling us what to do in the Beis HaMikdash. And here you are in America, you can do whatever you want, and no one says boo. It's unreal. No one, you talk to our ancestors, they would tell you you're living in fantasy island. To say that you can have an opportunity to go to Kollel and to talk and do whatever you want, pile ployim. This is the words of Chazal, they leap off the page. The words of Chazal, Kevon Shabosa Avoida, you have an opportunity to worship. Bosa Toida, you have an obligation to give thanks to Hashem. There are two major things about this country, at least in my mind, capitalism and freedom, which means freedom of religion. We spoke about capitalism, and now we speak about the freedom of religion. And the freedom of religion demands from us not just Thanksgiving once a year, seven times every day, B'Shem Malchus. Seven times a day. Sheva Bayoim Hilalucha.
The Megillah Afa, freedom of religion, that's number one. Megillah Afa.
Why is the Megillah Afa freedom of religion?
The Megillah Shel Yom HaAtzmaut Shel Abtzot HaBrit.
The Declaration of Independence. The Megillah, you're saying the Megillah Afa is the declaration.
Turkeys don't fly all that well.
You're saying that the Megillah Afa, you're saying, Rabbi Kalman is saying, it's the Constitution. The Megillah Afa is the Constitution which says on it the guarantee to preserve the rights of every citizen to worship. Pile Ploim, and Tzmamish, the Agudas Yisrael of America, represented by Torah Jews, the Gedolei Yisrael, on Thanksgiving, they achieved a psak halacha from the Supreme Court of the land to acknowledge and to confirm. That's right. You have a synagogue. You have a right to worship. Do what you want to do. Be careful. Be careful. Don't kill yourselves. Don't kill anyone else either in the process. Okay, be careful. But it's pile ployim. You have the right to worship. Today, we should celebrate, make hoidah, not because only Thanksgiving, but because the acknowledgement that you live in a land where the law allows you zevach. Kevon shebosa zevach, bosa toida. There's an obligation to thank Hashem. Shebchol eis erev vavoyker v'tzoharayim. Sometimes you just need to be woken up a little bit. What's going on in society? You see an advertisement, turkey on sale. It's a wake-up call to remember, Zevach Toida Yechabdi Nani. Kira Boisai, enjoy the apple pie. Have a wonderful day.
I'm sure Mark Levin would have enjoyed this session.
Thank you very much.
Especially now that he's learning a little bit more about Yiddishkeit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, I wanted
Benji
to just
Klein,
say.
You there?
Rabbi Levine.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I wanted to just tell you one thing that's very interesting from the Abarbanel when he says, when he makes a pact with Lavan at the end, he says it's not as Amatzivu as Oslo Ra'ah. It doesn't mean that he won't come to do any harm to him and he shouldn't come to do harm to him. He says, what it means is, you came to me, you were running away from Esau. So I helped you, right? we're severing ties now. Don't expect me. If anybody starts up with you, I'm not coming to your help. In other words, you broke NATO and the Warsaw Pact. I won't help you. If you're in trouble, don't come running to me, and I'm not coming to help you. That's how he translates.
Very interesting.
You said with every time. Don't look for help from me anymore.
Excellent.
And, I won't come to you anymore.